No, there was a point where I stopped enjoying it.
As soon as I
stopped enjoying it, it just wasn't worth the hassle. This industry's got to be fun. And if it's not, then you may as well, you know, go and open up a chain of news agents.
I don't class it as a job. We don't come to work. We come to a youth club on a Friday in here. Fuck me. It is absolutely pumping.
But that's what it's meant to be. That's exactly it. And if you're not enjoying it, they won't enjoy it.
Exactly.
If you get a bunch of like directors sitting around a table being like, right, let's design a barber shop. It feels like that. Like it doesn't feel authentic. Whereas like,
I would argue in that point that, yeah, it doesn't feel authentic, but again, coming back to brand, if you've got a specific vision and a specific customer that you're trying to target, design element of it is key to that.
I suppose what we're not doing is like, we're not targeting anyone. We are just a collective of like artists and like barbers who are like care about the craft, and people will be attracted to that.
Was there a difference between being a franchisee and being Marcos, the barbershop 100%. Owner? Is there a difference?
When I owned as a franchise, it was good to learn from, but I didn't really get much support from them. In my head, I'm thinking, I'm coming into this. I want to expand. I want to get shops together. If you're telling me, look, we're going to get this, we're going to expand, let's do it. Let's do it properly. Don't take the piss and then, you know, start going down rather than up.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi there. Welcome to another episode of The Noble Barber. I'm Anthony Laban, and I'm here with a panel of young business owners. I'm here with Connor from Project Barber, with Marco from The Cut London, which is where we are at the moment. Thank you very much, Marcos. And Joe Vipond from Joe Vipond London. Is that right?
It's correct.
Okay. I've got his name wrong every single time so far tonight, and I dropped everyone else's surname on purpose. So we're going to be talking really with you guys about setting up your store. So I think really the first topic we should talk about is why the kind of transition from being a barber, cutting hair yourself, being behind a chair for someone else or in someone else's shop. Why the move to branch out and be a barbershop owner? Who's going?
Anna.
I'll go. I don't mind. So yeah, I got into barbering like a bit of a different way. So I actually started off, I went to university, started working in like the corporate world. Like I didn't particularly love it or have a passion for it. But then I ended up going to this like barbershop near my office. And when I went in there, I just seen all the lads like having a good time. There was like good energy. All the customers were having fun. And I remember just thinking like, this is such a class job. Like what a way to like make a bit of money. And I couldn't get it out of my head. So then 4 years later, I just couldn't get it out of my head. I was speaking to my mates. And then, yeah, just quit my job one day. Decided to become a barber. Started working for someone, and I think I just loved it so much that I thought, why not open my own shop? But yeah, I don't know why you guys got into it, but it's just such a good environment, such a good atmosphere.
I think for me as well, it was the environment that made me change from construction. Working with my dad from 14, so up until 21. And then the environment, I was 19 on site managing staff, and you know what guys are like on site, older than you, and you're 19 swinging your weight around. It's like, it's not enjoyable. So the environment for me, like clean,
clean,
the connection that you make with your customers and just the atmosphere with the lads, that was what took.
That's class.
I think for me, I used to get my hair cut every week, like, and yeah, going into the shop and like the buzz around it, everyone's just like having a laugh. I could do this. And then you never listen to your mum and dad. If I listen to them, I should be rich. I'd have about 10 shops. They used to be like, be a barber. You love it. You're always getting your hair cut. Go and do it. And I never used to do it because I used to think it was the worst job. Like, not the worst job, but when you're 14, 15, you're like, no, I want to do other things. I don't want to do that. And then a couple of years later, I was like, you know what? Actually, like, I was just sitting there because he ended up being my mate and it was just a cool place. I was like, I'm going to do the course. Hated my old job, so went and done the course and never looked back.
But why the step up then? So, I mean, I think we kind of all get that you know, you guys obviously love the industry and the crack of being behind the chair and working with people. But, yeah, there's not everyone owns their own store. You know, I mean, for every shop owner, we've got a couple of hundred barbers who are working for someone.
Yeah.
What was your moment, your kind of crossroads in the, yeah, your crossroads that you went, I'm going
to
do it?
To be honest, I think I knew from the start. I don't know about you guys, but I'm like a pretty ambitious, driven person. And I think like no matter what I do, like I want to reach the top.
It was always a vehicle that I will become a barber and then I'll open up my barbershop.
Yeah, I think so. I just said, why not? Like,
I never thought I wanted to be a barber. Like it was always like the business for me. I always wanted to be successful in something. And I think when I stumbled across barbering, it was more self-expression. And, you know, from what I, at the time, barbering for me was like the tattoo shops and things like that. And that's how I knew it. And then I thought, well, actually, no, it's not. But as I started to learn and enjoy it, when I got explained the business side of it as well, so I was explained £1 a minute. And you'll do well. So this guy was drawing on a whiteboard and he was like, £1, 1 minute, 15 minute haircuts, £15, 30 minute haircuts, £30, 45 minute haircuts, £45. And he said, it's just different markets. There's nothing wrong with either of them. You can be where you want, but it's a different type of customer in a different market. And I, like yourself, wanted to be the best. So I was like, well.
And that ambition was always there for you. You
think? 100% for me, yeah.
I think I kind of like, fell into owning it, like, which sounds weird, but because I worked for a different brand first, had a franchise with them, and then kind of like, I didn't want to be part of that franchise anymore. So it kind of like, well, I had to take it upon myself and be like, right, I'm either taking the shop or I'm going to have to like disappear and like lose the shop completely. And luckily it worked in my favor and I managed to keep the shop that we're in now. Yeah. And it's worked well ever since.
Yeah. See, I like it. I mean, I was accidental, I think.
Yeah.
I think I was probably unemployable. So so we've made that leap. You've made that. Yeah. And I do think, I agree, most of the people I know who seem to open up shops tend to have had that ambition. Yeah, I've met a lot of barbers recently who've gone on well and they were like footballers that had injuries or, you know, they're quite a group of ambitious people anyway. But there's the reality of opening your own shop. So why, you know, you're Battersea, you're Clapham, you know, you're London's Leicester Square. I don't know why it feels like you got to do that. But why did you scout your areas? Are you from these areas? How did you, why where you are?
Yeah, I live in Wimbledon. So again, when...
You can't throw a rock without it in a barbershop in Wimbledon. It's
a lot, literally. I worked in Dulwich first and then...
That was with the head franchisee?
Yeah. Well, once I finished the course, worked there and they were like, listen, we're going to franchise a few shops. Do you want it? And then they were like, we'll open you up a shop rather than you take a new one on. And I was like, no, I want the Clapham... Sorry. They said, we'll open you up a new shop rather you taking an existing shop. Yeah. And I was like, no.
And this was already here?
Yeah, I was like, I live in Wimbledon. I want Clapham. It's easy to get to work. Yeah. I'm lazy when it comes to traveling. So I kind of like forced my way to take the shop off of them. And it worked well.
Nice.
So I got ordered.
You wouldn't believe this, but I actually was going to, so it was after COVID when I opened up and I was actually going to open in Shoreditch and I had like went and looked at like a location there. I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. But anyway, I got this like weird...
You worked around that area.
I worked around that area, so like a lot of clients and stuff. So, but I had this...
Where
like,
did you work over there?
I worked at Barber. Okay. In Spitalfields. So a lot of clients around there. So anyway, after COVID, yeah, seen a location, was like, yeah, this is perfect. But I got this like weird gut feeling that just something wasn't right when I met the landlord.
What year was this?
This was 2021.
Okay.
Yeah.
Post-COVID.
Straight after. And yeah, I just got a weird feeling from the landlord. And sometimes you got to just go with your gut. And I was going for a run. So I live in like Brixton Hill. And I was going for a run one day and I just ran into Battersea Rise and the shop was there. And I was just like, you know what, this looks all right. It was almost like it came to me. You know, there was no planning. There was no like, nice, this would be a good location.
It does come to you though, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I was literally just on a run.
And yours?
Yeah, so I'm from Bolton. So a small town just outside of Manchester. I was working at Barber, Manchester for Johnny. And just opportunity meets hard work. So a client of mine was a GM, got the job as a GM for a new restaurant inside a 5-star hotel. He invited the directors down for a haircut, cut the hair. They invited me to the launch night of this new restaurant. And one thing led to another, and over a longer period of time, I had an idea to, I wanted to open a barbershop inside a hotel, but I was thinking Manchester. And as I asked the conversation, I asked him, how would that work? How would it look? And he pulled out plans for the Londoner, which is on Leicester Square. And he said, is this something you'd be interested in? And obviously being from Bolton, I was like, well, snatch your hand off at it. But there was a long process to get there. It was, you know, I left Barber, opened up a salon in Manchester City Centre. But, and this is where, for me, it was the business side of it. I was like, if I've got this opportunity to open up a business in central London, I need to be on my A game. And that was where the business came into it for me. It was like, right, I need to learn business. And a friend of mine, he wanted to open a barbershop in Manchester City Centre, asked me if I'd like to manage it and run it for him. I opened that 3 months later, COVID hit, and then that was that. So I felt myself stuck thinking, shit, I'm supposed to be opening a barbershop in London in soon, but we didn't know what was going on. They told me that the opening was postponed. So I said, well, I'm going to go to Dubai so I can carry on cutting hair. Because in my head, I was like, I need to carry on upskilling to be able to handle the business side of it.
Did
I
you have
to
much
learn.
Part of the look of your space, or was that designed for you?
That was designed for me. And to be honest, Anthony, a struggle of mine was I wanted to build a brand. Like, and to build a brand within an establishment that isn't yours, that you have no control over design, it was very tough because I had the marketing element of it, which I had to push what I wanted people to see and feel about the experience. As much as I love the establishment, it's beautiful, but like, what about...
You didn't actually get down to building.
Yeah. I didn't want to be Joe Vipond at the Londoner. I wanted to be Joe Vipond London. So it's like, I didn't want to be known as the barber at the Londoner when I've got my own business. And that's what I was trying to push.
But you had the... So this was a franchise building.
Yeah.
And you'd done a real big... You did a big changeover for this.
Yeah, so we changed it up completely.
Was that an important bit? And does this feel more like...
Yeah, before it was very old school looking, quite like a Turkish barber's kind of vibe, like, you know, old school aesthetics and stuff like that, where I feel like we've now brightened it up massively and it's more young. We obviously cater for everyone, but where we're based in Clapham, a lot of young professionals, like everyone finishes uni, comes to Clapham. Anyone who comes to Clapham, they want to get a cut. They're like, I don't know where to go. We've got quite a young team. I won't say young, but like, you know, a good age team to fit the clients.
Yeah.
So.
And the look is important for.
Yeah, massively. Because I feel like if it's old school looking, you're going to get more old school people, where now we've brightened it up. We've had, in the last couple of months, so many new customers. I don't know if it's like that changeover period where everyone's moving out of London and come back into London, or if it's because of the look. But it has.
I think this is what people don't understand about the look and feel of your salon. Yeah. When I talk about brand, I mean, you know, people talk about it in a negative light, but I think they don't understand the power of it, right? Yeah. So once you know what you want, who you are, your values for the business, and you lay it out, you attract a customer, a specific customer.
No, I agree. Yeah, 100%. And I mean, your place, I mean, you know, we spoke about, we nearly filmed it yours, but you know, yours is really different. I mean, beautiful store.
Yeah.
And, you know, Luke himself was saying how much he drives past and swerves every time he sees it. But yeah, where did you go from your look? I mean, I think the look of your shops is really vital and great. But
to be honest, I feel like our shop, I wanted like a sort of studio feel to it. Like, I like the idea of like artists like working in a studio. And like, I feel like our barbers are like quite like arty, and they are artists in their own right. Like, they really care about the craft and fundamentals of cutting hair. So I wanted that look to it.
Did you design it?
So this is the thing. I think why it feels good is that, and there's a good energy in there, is like me and my mates like built it. So I didn't like hire people to come in and go, yeah, design me a shop. I was just like, hey, Andy, you're free. Yeah, cool. Would you be able to do this? How could you do this? So it was like a bunch of mates just got together, built it up, and it just naturally developed, and it doesn't look
anywhere near as homemade as he's making it. But we'll make sure some pictures come up, because it's a great look. But.
Yeah, no, it looks spot on and brilliant. But what I'm saying is just like the energy is that it was built by community. You know what I mean? Like sometimes if you get a bunch of like directors sitting around a table being like, right, let's design a barber shop. It feels like that. Like it doesn't feel authentic. Whereas like ours was built by our community.
In that point, that yeah, it doesn't feel authentic. But again, coming back to brand, if you've got a specific vision and a specific customer that you're trying to target, design element of it is key to that.
I suppose what we're not doing is like, we're not targeting anyone. We are just a collective of like artists and like barbers who are like care about the craft, and people will be attracted to that.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. It's like, we're not like, we haven't been like calculated in like our, the way that we're doing things. We're just like, we just love barbering. We're good at it. We're a good bunch of dudes.
And yeah, people, attract people are attracted people. To that.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like the shop automatically attracts people because they're saying, we don't like, you know, our shops look specifically to get these clients. We've done it just, we needed to freshen up. So like, again, like you said, it was your mate. Like, I just got my mate. I've been cutting this for 10 years. He's a builder. Yeah. I was like, listen, you want fancy doing the shop? He was like, yeah, what do you want? I was like, mess around with it, see what you get up to.
Yeah.
And he was like, sweet. And it's kind of like, if people will walk past and they'll see the shop and be like, I'm going to go in there. Someone might walk past and be like, I'm not going to go in there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like however the shop turns out, it just, I don't know.
I think it's like, it's almost like a representation of you. I feel like businesses are representations of their owners. And it's like, it is an extension of me. I know it's probably dangerous to say because I'm so attached to it, but like it is like an extension of me. Like the way I've picked every little thing out.
Well, and exactly, even though you've like, designed it.
Yeah. Even though I've like, even though I've got friends in to do it and stuff, I haven't just been like, I'll do whatever you want. I have like thought about it. I've picked the best things that I've wanted for the shop, but I didn't have like an end goal of like, right, I need to make it look like this for this. It just was like,
not for that specific reason.
I get a bit of this, I get a bit of that. And it just, it's just naturally, it almost just
naturally built it. Yeah. And what I'm trying to say is that you can craft it the way exactly want it specifically.
Yeah.
And just knowing them extra details would attract a certain type of.
Have you been able to do that with your shop?
Not with this one specifically, but our growth plans and what we've got going on, the design element is like massive.
Bugs you more because you've not had that opportunity.
I'm sure you know what he's talking to. I'm a little bit fuming.
I'm like, I just want to get this salon open.
So if you've got to this stage, and I really hear that, and I do like that, you know, I walk into my buildings and I love them. They all feel like home. It's really important that I feel comfortable. Because if I don't, why would anybody else? But have you been surprised by, you know, what have you been caught out by from setting up your own? Are there bits that have jumped out and you're like, shit, I didn't think of that?
As in building the shop?
Building it, or just the actual, you know, the process of from signing your lease and getting the key to opening the door and doing your first haircut?
Yeah, what I feel like, and Joe, you might be able to help other people with this, is that like no one teaches you the business aspect of when you're going through this journey.
I feel like you learn.
So like so many, like, I remember getting on the tools and being like, oh, I've got to be the best barber in the shop. And I'd like focused years of my time, like learning the craft and all this stuff. And then by the time I went to open up a business, I was like, I've not got a clue what I'm doing. And it's like, I mean, I'll happily admit to that. Like, and it's been a learning process. And every year now, I'm almost learning more about business. I learn more about business now than I am barbering. So I remember when I was younger, I'd like watch videos of haircuts, and now I'm watching business videos.
Well, this is what we were saying before, right? It's like nobody's teaching that, especially to the young lads. And like I said, I was forced to, you know, learn about business when you're opening in an establishment, you're four floors underground, brand new hotel, COVID, no travel borders, no clients. You're forced. I was thinking, this is the best thing in the world, major achievement. And then I was hit with, shit, now I've got to get clients. No help, you know? No one was helping me. I had to figure it out, but I was forced to think business.
Yeah.
And that's this is why I'm setting up the coaching, because there's the young lads that don't understand the business element that I can teach. You know, and we can help that generation. I want to play that part in this industry.
But I guess that's it, though, isn't it? Day one at management school is generally the day one of opening your shop.
I feel like you learn on
the
job. You have to teach yourself, isn't it? So, like,
biggest shocker, though.
Yeah, it's a big shock because, like, at first you're like, you're a barber, you're not a businessman, and you're opening up the shop to be a barber. And then the more you start doing it, the more you start realizing,
it's a different skill set.
I've got to pay people. I need to do the books. I need to do this. I need to do that. How am I going to draw customers? Am I going to, you know, how are you going to make your prices, put them up, like we were saying before as well?
Yeah.
So it, but you slowly learn along the way.
Yeah. Sometimes ignorance is bliss. It's like, I think if I knew all the stuff that went into it, I don't know if I would have done it. And it's like, man, I didn't, honestly, when I hit the VAT, my accountant just called me. He was like, you've hit VAT. I was like, all right, what does that mean? And like, you just have to explain it. And it's, yeah, there is like a bit of naivety there, but it sort of helps you because you just, like I said, you just learn on the job. And
yeah.
You just got to deal,
that's also a good
deal with it.
Yeah. You know,
Did you find that resilience somewhere inside of you?
Yeah, you have to. My journey has been tough. You know? I couldn't afford rent at one point. Mm. You know, I was sleeping in a hotel free of charge, but the reality of that was it wasn't nice living in a hotel and then traveling to a hotel to, you know, cut hair, and that was your life until you figured it out.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what the younger generation, I feel, I'm positive about the industry going forward, and I feel that the lads that are younger do need that support, that help.
Yeah,
not just lads, you know, everybody, that the younger generation don't understand the business element of it, and save them freaking hundreds of thousands of pounds and years of your life trying to figure it out, right?
But do you find, is it the paperwork side? Is it, I've got to pay people, I've got to set a payroll, I've got to do
it's,
my VAT.
It's everything. Systems. It's like, it's just like, it is like one of the biggest jobs in the world, because not only are you like building a business, you're building a team, you're training the team, you're making sure, so you're managing, and then you're also trying to do accountancy, marketing, someone might open up down the road. You're doing all this, and then before you know it, someone's called in six and you're dealing with that. And it's just, there is just so much to this game.
And a lot of it you won't learn without experience.
No.
But there's certain parts that...
And also the anxiety that comes up when you're dealing with it for the first time. So it's like, you know, you might be sweet and everything's a pumping, and then one of your staff members might say like, oh, I'm not going to come in, or...
Yeah.
Might come in drunk. So you're dealing with it for the first time. So you're anxious, and then I think the longer you're in this game, and you probably notice like maybe them things just like roll off your back. But like when you first get these problems... Like you, well, for me anyway, I have to deal with like the anxiety.
But that's what I'm interested in with. What was for you, if I talk about your first few months of owning, what's the one anxiety moment? Because I definitely remember mine, the first time, this kind of wave of, what the fuck have I done?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Why am I doing this? It was a proper, I don't think I'd probably say panic attack, but it was definitely this kind of anxiety that came over and went, I've bitten off too much.
Yeah.
It must have been.
That was me for 6 months. Right. Yeah. Literally. I sat there and, you know, we're four floors underground, like I said, in a spa, and there's no footfall. And I was thinking in my head, setting up this barbershop, come to London, experience in the market, local market. I was thinking, how the freaking hell am I going to get clients in here?
But you made the step from, so you had the support, presumably from the franchisor. Was there a difference between being a franchisee and being Marcos, the barbershop 100%. Owner? Is there a difference? Did it feel...
It did. Like when I owned it as a franchise, it was good, but at the same time, it was good to learn from, but I didn't really get much support from them. I think it was more one-sided, like, you know, they'll take your money and run with it, rather than, in my head, I'm thinking, I'm coming into this. I want to expand. I want to get shops together. Like, you know, I'm your best friend until we've had a falling out. If you're telling me, look, we're going to get this, we're going to expand, let's do it. Let's do it properly. Don't take the piss and then, you know, start going down rather than up.
Mm.
That's not an agreement to me personally. So it was good at the start. Obviously it's new, it's exciting. It was wicked. Then it just kind of went a bit flat. And then once I changed over, I was like, I'm so happy I've done it. But the only scary thing was for me, I felt, was because it's not a high street, it's like yours is even worse. Because you're again 4 feet under. Because it's not like a high street, it's kind of like, oh, I've stumbled upon them, rather than I've walked down the high street, there's a cool shop. Where you're on a high street. So it's a bit like, wow, that's cool. You're going to get a lot more footfall. For us, it's massive. Like word of mouth rather than that. Mm. Yeah. That was the scary side of it.
Well, you must be proud of building a word of mouth business, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. You know, I think like, that's one of my regulars. So for us, we've built like a massive community relationship now. Like with him, he's got three flatmates, all Irish boys. He brings all of his mates. And again, he's got another three mates who have just moved around the area. Right, you know where to go. So it's word of mouth now. Yeah. And everyone's starting to like jump back on and jump back into us.
Yeah.
Well, I did feel like when we did change over, I don't know why, we did lose like 20-30%, I'd say. I noticed it going down. I'm like,
what do you think that was?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you.
Is it the brand?
It must have been. Like, I had regular clients who were coming in once a week, every 2 weeks and stuff. And I was cutting their hair even when the shop was getting redone.
Yeah.
And as soon as we were open, they just disappeared. I was like, what? I'm like, that's weird.
I mean, that's kind of leading us neatly onto the, you know, one of the big questions I get asked all the time is, you know, how do you attract your customers? How do you, did you have this plan? Did you sit down? This is the idea that I think a lot of people have, that as a business owner, you sit down with this fictitious pad and you write down a plan and you follow it to the letter. And at the end, you have a successful business. I've never had a pad. But, you know, how do you, there's a moment where you know you're opening or the doors are about to happen, you've got your launch, and how did you attract your customers? Where did you find your tribe?
To be fair, I remember you saying, like, what was it like at the start? And I remember I had, like, all the shop done. I was like, this place looks, like, really nice, looks sick. It'll attract people. And then I was, like, standing just behind the reception, and I was just, like, day one, I was like, all right, cool, like, let's see how this works. And you would just, like, watch people, like, walking past the shop, looking in, being like, it's so weird, and there's just one dude like behind the reception, like, and it's hard because people got to take a chance on you, especially if like the shop isn't busy or whatever. They just like see this one guy, they're like, whatever. But it just, that was it. Just one person came in, and in my mindset was like, whoever walks through that door is becoming my client. I don't care who it is.
Giving the best service you can give them.
So it would be like someone's barber is away on holiday, they come in, and I'm just like smashing it, you know, giving them full of chat, the best haircut I could give. Right, that was one. Then two, then three, then four, and then we just build like that. And then we just got busy,
completely different again, just because the model's different inside a hotel. You know, I wasn't getting customers from the hotel, so I thought, if I don't get customers from outside in, I'm not going to have a business, you know? So again, it was digital marketing, you know, Google, focus on giving the clients the best service you can give them, everyone that you do get. So then it's the word of mouth. But then get them to get a review on Google. Build your Google profile.
Yeah, that's you
know,
major.
Google Ads, you know.
Google
a lot
Ads
of people
as well.
Don't use digital marketing and paid ads, but, you know, you work out your margins, and as long as you're making profit, then ads are fine. You know, you've got to spend money to make money.
Exactly.
But again, I had to work this out. Like, no one told me, like, digital marketing strategy. I was thinking, I'm inside a hotel with no control over the operational systems, no control over how do I get a customer from upstairs down? How do I get a customer from in the reception to know that we're here?
Yeah.
They're all problems that I dealt with. So I just focused on everything outside in, you know, how do I get good, like build the brand, the reputation on Google, build the website and everything. Yeah. And
I almost did like the reverse because we're on the high street and people could see us. It's interesting you said you focused on the outside in and I focused on the inside out. So I was just like, right, let's make sure that everyone in here is given the best haircut they could possibly give. And it was just all word of mouth, and still like it's all word of mouth.
I did that as well. Yeah. You know, I had to give the best service because again, word of mouth, if I didn't give a good service, then I'm not going to get a client back, right?
Yeah.
And for someone to come, it's quite intimidating actually. You know, if you're in a 5-star establishment, a luxury hotel.
I've been into the London. You know, I got lost 4 times. It's like the least. It's like Hampton Court maze. I couldn't find anything.
You probably didn't even know there's a barbershop in there, right?
And it does go down.
It goes down.
I went to some event there and I'm kind of down the stairs and then I went back up and they're like, you can't go in there.
Yeah.
I got utterly lost. So to come in for a haircut and snake your way through.
Exactly. So for someone outside to walk into a hotel lobby, to the lift, downstairs, it's intimidating for quite a lot of people. So we had to build the approachability around the brand. You know, we had to make sure that that was how we were portrayed. We weren't exclusive. Even though it looks exclusive, we actually were for everyone. So just learning. And this is where the business element comes in. You learn all the things that the difficulties and the challenges that you faced with is where you learn the most, right?
So did you find your tribe, or do you think your tribe's found you?
Ooh, good question.
Yeah, that is a good question.
That's just doing my job, Liz.
I think they find you. I think that you like set up your stall to the best of your ability. You do the best cuts that you can do, and then people will just be attracted to your vibe or not. And there's so many different barbershops, but the same way there's so many different coffee shops, and like, why does one person go to another one? You just like vibe.
That's what we're talking about, the self-expression, right?
Yeah.
But how your shop is your vibe, and you attract your people, you attract your staff members, and it is. But you can craft that. Well, authentically as well. You can
and
still
same with
do
your
that.
Team as well. That's what like one of the cool things I've noticed as well is like because you don't when you're a barber you attract clients, but when you're like a shop owner you attract teams, and it's like it's cool when you look around your shop and you're like, oh yeah, these dudes are all like everyone's like got a similar vibe, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's hard to find staff though. That's my biggest struggle. Like I feel like they're either too good and they want like crazy money, or they've got their own shop, or they're just not. Because we charge like a bit more than, you know, like your little cheap barbershop, it's hard. You can't really put someone on as a junior and still charge that amount. You either have to take one as an apprentice and train them up properly, or like get a good barber. That's a hard barrier to get.
How did you find your staff?
My staff, luckily, they've all like come to me and like asked for jobs, luckily. And you know what? I've had my team for a very long time. One of them left. He was with us for 10 years. Again, my other barber, he's been in for like 7-8 years. Again, one of them came, left, and then come back because he didn't know if he wanted to be a barber anymore. And my newest guy, he just read past and he was like, oh, I like to look at that shop.
Yeah, nice.
He come and work
for
us.
People, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I've got a guy that works with me as well, and he's just left the salon. But luckily, he was charging top prices in Mayfair. You know, and the establishment, you know, he wanted to serve his clients in a similar environment.
Did he like going from like a salon, like busy shop?
His clients love it. Like his clients, the private luxury experience, his clients love it. And that's what I pride myself in, a different experience
and
a different type of client likes different things, right? No, I don't think anything's wrong. You know, this industry is full of, from top to bottom, it's different. But there's no wrong, right or wrong. It's just whatever you want, right?
We spoke earlier and obviously pricing does come up and it's a big conversation we've had previously. But how do you guys, how did you price it?
I'd like to say that I had a well thought out strategic plan, but I'd like, to be honest, I knew that I had like worked in some really good shops and I knew that I was like, had some talent, like, so I looked around the area just seeing who was charging most and was like, I'll match them, and then stuck with them. And then as you know, inflation has happened and as like prices have gone up and stuff, I've just incrementally like increased the price of our cuts.
This is where I'm not saying that it's wrong, but my posing opinion on that is like, how did you put yourself in the market, like according to value that you provide? Like you looked everyone in the area,
yeah,
and he was charging this, he was charging this, he was charging this. Right, I'm going to put mine there.
Rather than looking at what your cost, what's it costing you to do a haircut?
And
this is how much money I want to make.
Oh, for sure. And that's why I said about like naivety at the start. Like,
Do you feel like you've got your pricing? Like, actually, this is what I need to charge because that's what it costs me. And that, do you now understand how much of that haircut is yours?
Yeah. So now, like, as time's gone on and I've moved more towards like the business side of things. I've been able to like, you know, work with an accountant, look at the figures, and luckily we're in a pretty good place. Mm. But you're like, it's all like a learning experience.
Yeah. You guys the same? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. Yeah. Like I thought like the area we're in, the rent we're paying, you kind of got to match it to the rent rather than client base wise.
Yeah.
But after talking, I think, prices might have to go up.
Just before we came on, we were just chatting. But you know, you were saying that, you were quite nervous about it. You didn't feel comfortable about a price increase.
In, like, someone came in earlier, was like, how much is a beard trim? I said, 18 quid. He's like, what do you mean 18 quid, mate? You're paying for rent around here. You know how much you're paying.
What, he thinks that's expensive?
Exactly.
I've charged £48.
Exactly.
Maybe your model's different though, because yours is like a boutique service one-on-one. It's like you can sort of do it. Where say if like we've got I've got 5 chairs in my shop. Mm. So these are like I said, I'm learning as a businessman and all different financial models. Like who knows, maybe you can charge more and more, but like, when I'm running my business, we've had to play it like sort of safe and like
when
concise.
Do you get that when is there that turning
point?
Usually
we up our prices when we're like fully booked and that I feel like the shop is pumping and I'm like, right, look, this makes sense.
And how much do you put it up by each time? A couple of
quid, it just depends like what how we're feeling, but yeah, a couple of quid, it could be a bit more, but.
But this is what we're saying about value, right? So if you've got certain elements, I know, I appreciate it, it's a different model and it's a luxury experience, and but in a salon environment, there's probably certain elements of value away from the haircut.
But would you, would you charge different value for different barbers? So say like you're like, I know my value, you should charge to your value, right? So say I'm like, right, I know my value is like 60 quid a cut or whatever because I've been doing it for so long, I've opened up a shop, et cetera.
I think that's a good idea.
So then the next guy that you get in is like, he obviously has only been working for 3 years, that's why he's working for you. Then the next guy might be working 2 years and 1 year. So it's like, as a shop, it's like, do you tier your pricing to each barber?
Well, then it depends on the experience. For me, it's about experience. So the added value is what the customers see from the experience.
Yeah,
okay, so away from the haircut, your lads are charged. Do you all charge the same right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the added value, that it's not going to come from the technical ability of the haircut, because everyone's probably, I'm sure they're all great, right? So getting technical skills, haircutting, education right now, it's not going to change much. But the value from the experience that you provide is what your customer's going to see different. So everyone can come up at the same price is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, I understand.
I think that's what people are missing out on is, you know, there's other things that you can do away from cutting hair to add so much value.
Sure. It's also the areas, like you say, you know, it's very rent dependent.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and I know this area, you know, is expensive. Yeah, I know where you are, but I presume you're paying quite a decent rent.
Ours is expensive.
And obviously, you know, London's Leicester Square. but you know, I mean, there's not a huge difference. You guys are charging quite similarly pricing, I think.
So. Yeah.
Although we're now, 37. There's a couple of quid difference. So Marcus will be charging more from tomorrow.
Good man.
you know, you're in the West End. So again, and you're in a, you know, a 6-star hotel. So what are you charging for a
80 for a haircut.
80 quid for a haircut. Well, you guys are charging around the kind of 35, 40 quid mark.
Yeah.
But it's finding your market. I know a lot of people kind of spit their cornflakes out when you start talking about 50-60 pound haircuts.
Do you think it makes a difference on timing? Like how long do you spend that
timing?
A haircut?
Yeah, 100%.
How long is your
45
haircut?
Minutes.
45
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, but timing definitely 100%.
So if you put your haircut for 80 quid, but you've done half an hour, do you think people turn their nose up at it, or do you not think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
I think so.
Because you know what, that extra 15 minutes is the head wash. It's, you know, the intimate experience that you're providing. It's everything else. Yeah. The little touches that take time.
Yeah, 100%.
And the conversation in between. You know.
I think that's it. You can't, I think if you set your stall that that's what it is, this is what we sell, and then you don't, it's like, you know, you go in to get a bag of apples and the bag of apples is a fiver and you come out and you realise I've only put one apple. You're going back going, I want me 4 quid. And I do think there is that, it's establishing for all of us here that it's not, it's more than just a haircut.
And
that's how you found your
livelihoods, right?
Yeah. And that's how you found it. Yeah.
Yeah, like we were saying, like that this is our lives. Mm.
And that clientele will choose how much of their income they want to spend on you.
And how much value they think they're getting from your service, you know. If you respect and you say, this is my service, I valued at this, your customers will value you and your service at that price.
Yeah.
And if they don't, they're not supposed to be there. You find clients elsewhere.
Yeah.
Quick once round if we can. I'm really intrigued. We've spoken a lot about what other people do on social media and how they're doing it and what we like and so on. What do you guys do? How do you connect? How do you use, I know you use Google Maps and we all use reviews, but how do you use like Insta and Reels? And is that a big part of what you do?
Admittedly, we could be better at like social media. I think what happens is when your shop gets very busy, you tend to say like, well, you can only put your energy in so many places. So you're like, we're super busy. We don't need to worry about attracting clients. But the barbers are very good. We're all very good at like posting haircuts. And I think we use it more to connect with other barbers versus customers.
Definitely.
And maybe that's something we could take a look at, like, switch in or have a bit more of a balance. But yeah, we're definitely more towards like, this is a good haircut we've done.
Your average Joe ain't going to go and look at a barber page though.
Yeah.
Like, why is he going to bother? Do you know what I mean? Even though they should, because that's kind of like, we want them to, that's why we're basically doing it.
Mm.
But if you're getting your haircut once a month, you don't really care. If you've seen a cool shop, you're going to go there. You're not going to be like, oh, let's scroll on Instagram and find a barber. Because one, they ain't going to know the name of this place. two, they're not going
to... I think as long as there's enough on there to see that you're good enough, you know, like for me, to social media, I delegate and I, as long as the story that I'm trying to create for the customer is displayed, you know, like we were talking about clients not wanting a camera in the face, some of them, especially ones that are in a private atmosphere, they just don't want a camera shoving in the face after the haircut, you know?
Yeah, they pay that price to be hidden.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly that. So,
but have you got barbers that like to show off a bit? Have you got barbers who've got their own Insta that are doing their own thing?
Three of all of our barbers have their own Instagrams, and I think it's just a matter of like showing your work and being proud of it. But yeah, all of our barbers have their own Instagrams. They're all sort of encouraged to post and to create a profile. And I mean, it is good. Like if once you've got a profile, it'll like lead to other opportunities, whether it be like our shop and other shops. But yeah.
Yeah, and the power of collaboration as well. You know, like
when... So do you do other things? Do you... certainly sitting in your shop with logos on everything. Do you merch up? Have you
all
done?
We've got a fully branded product line. And one good thing about it, which when I was like creating it, I wanted it to be like zero plastic. So it's got like, we have got a little bit of plastic where it needed to be like on salt sprays and stuff. But most of the materials are biodegradable or you know, recyclable. So we've got like a full product line. It's all branded.
That's decent.
Yeah. And does that not, that you don't Insta up that? Does that not a little picture of you waving your bottle of shampoo?
With like energy, it's like, I feel there's like, we are like a very fast growing business and there is so much to do within it. Like there's full staff, cutting hair, selling products, getting people to sell. Like
selling products online.
We do sell online, but like I said, there needs to be more of a
and
push.
Do you send them out then, or how?
We send them out.
From the shop, you just like package them up and
get
send
the
them,
get the apprentice to stick it in a little like package and run down this to
love it.
The shop.
Do you merch at all?
I need to get into.
I met Sliders, and Sliders got caps, and you can't see, you can't mistake where Mark is. You know, he's got everything merched up, and I love that. I've not got into that myself at all.
Well, I haven't either, but we do get a lot of clients like who say, "I love your logo. Have you got any like t-shirts and stuff?" So I think I'm going to do it, but not like loads of them. Like, so my mate who helped me design the logo, he's a graphic designer and he's just a bit of fun. He was like, "What do you think of these, bro?" And sent me about 20 different like t-shirt designs. I was like, some of these are wicked. So I was showing him to my mates. I was like, mate, you need to get these printed up. Like, but at the same time,
like, it looks like it's set to go on a baseball hat.
But then sometimes I feel like, are you stepping away from cutting hair and trying to be too involved with other things?
But then it just depends what you want, doesn't it?
Exactly. Again,
like, do you want to run the business? Do you want to be successful in business? Do you want to be a barber? Do you want to be just in the barber shop? What do you want, you know?
Yeah.
What do you want?
I'm working on other things outside of barbering that are to do with the brand, you know?
The old famous side hustle.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Well, that's part one. Tune back in for part two. Many more topics to come.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.